The first one is what has become known, I think, as the Holden Creed. Lord God, you have called your servants to ventures of which we cannot see the ending, by paths as yet untrodden, through perils unknown. Give us faith to go out with good courage, not knowing where we go, but only that your hand is leading us and your love supporting us, through Jesus Christ our Lord. And then Anna reminded me of a very good word by Kierkegaard, who has got a lot to say about discipleship. Would you tell us? And I think the two of them tie in with each other, and then I've got one here which touches on another aspect. And it is by the German poet Rilke. Be patient towards all that is unsolved in your heart. Try to love the questions themselves like locked rooms and like books that are written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answer which cannot be given you, because you would not be able to live it. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer. Perhaps they can seem almost contradictory, but to me they represent two aspects of what the gospel is about. And this one by Rilke tells me something about what grace is by using the example of the gift of time. It tells me something about that Christian life is grace, or is grace living. That we are accepted at the place where we are at, and that we are held even in our incomplete state. And from this sense of acceptance and being held can then grow, and a sense of empowering. From that grace can grow a sense of empowerment, which then pushes us to discipleship and to action, and which calls us to in trust to be faithful and risk-taking, and try to enhance life, as the other two quotations talk about it. So I see those two things tied in very much: grace and acting out of grace. And as we have discussed it before, the Lutheran tradition has perhaps not been that good at holding the two together, that the emphasis has been very much on the grace, which is of course a basis for discipleship, but we shouldn't forget the active living out faith in faithfulness.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah.
For myself, and I don't know if anyone else needs this clarification, how synonymously are we speaking of discipleship as with ministry? To be disciples, to be ministers. That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I would say that I see our discussion of what discipleship is as coming out of our talking about lay ministry. I wouldn't see that as, well, I guess I would see that as almost the same thing.
Because I do, and I wasn't
just
sure.
Yeah. Okay. That compared to the ordained ministry, discipleship is the ministry for everybody, for all of us. And I would say that discipleship is a ministry of outreach, perhaps that whereas the ordained ministry is very much within the church for the function of the church. Discipleship is the outreach by which the church reaches beyond its boundaries, and I don't think that the church would be without that. Would be if people didn't take personal discipleship seriously.
Do you then see the ordained ministry as not in the realm of discipleship? I mean, the minister is a disciple.
Yeah, I would say as yeah.
But in the building itself and in the tradition itself, is it other than discipleship?
Well, the ordained ministry is for the person who is in it, hopefully, his or her personal discipleship, but at the same time it is
right.
an institutionalized position
right.
that serves a certain function, and you have to fill out that position and fill in that function.
Mm-hmm.
And as we talked about it, that ordained ministry is not enough. It's not enough to uphold the church. We need the lay ministry and that people take their own discipleship seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about grace and commitment, I think that having them tied together is what is perhaps the leading thread in the Bible, like in the Great Commandment, that the fact that we are loved first in order that we can love others very strongly in the Gospel of John, for example. I would like if we could just try to share some of our ideas about or insights about what discipleship is. I've already mentioned some in this connection, like that I would see it as risk-taking. And trust. And love. Acting out of love. And passing on that love and faithfulness.
I thought it was trust and love and faithfulness too, like in my mind, and getting burned in the process thereof.
Yeah.
You know,
something like accepting to be vulnerable.
Yeah. Being abused,
even perhaps even suffer, being willing to suffer.
To die.
Yeah.
Mind boggling.
I would say to live out that connection that is between our conviction or our vision and our acts, to have that wholeness, that there is a wholeness or a unity between who we are and what we do. What more?
Wash feet.
Today.
Mm-hmm.
Washing feet in the sense of, in the ancient biblical time, it was a necessary thing to do. And there's a lot of things that we see around us that, well, I should do that, but oh, well, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to get ourselves dirty. We don't want to jump in and do these things.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, service.
Yeah.
From being humble else to do the things that no one else are willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has to be done. Mm-hmm.
Like,
tied into what John said, to, mm-hmm. to be able to dig down and do that dirty thing that you have enough to.
Mm-hmm.
Like scrubbing toilets.
Yeah.
And to do it
singing. Yeah. And I would say perhaps to call out gifts in people. Uh-huh. And at the same time it hopefully calls out your own gifts. And so call out gifts or affirm people.
Yeah, I think that's a real ministry, affirming people. There's so yeah. much potential to do that that's just never taken advantage of. I mean, you don't have to, you can be completely honest and seeing things that are worthy of praise without making up things that are worthy of praise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such yeah. a good See feeling that, to give yeah. that gift, not just to receive it, even better feeling
yeah.
to give it.
Yeah. Yeah, and see the value in things and in little things, and
yeah.
and you know, perhaps see the meaning in what is, instead of always striving for a higher meaning or for creating that meaning ourselves. And that is probably something to do with being present where mm-hmm. we are and with the people we are with and in the situations that we're in.
And to live with what you have instead of asking for more. All the time
yeah.
asking, even if we should ask for, to keep on questioning things, but to be able to rest in what we have.
Yeah.
To rest in the things that we do have.
Yeah.
But at the same time, keep.
I agree. At the same time, I think that discipleship also has something to do with having a hope or a vision. So we are in that tension between
yeah.
what is now and affirming what is now and be present with what is now and then have a vision
yeah.
for how things could become and a hope that keeps us going.
With availability. We have to be available
yeah.
all
yeah.
the time. Could you talk to me about this? Could you just come in for 5 minutes and also letting people know where you can be found. It's so easy to hide.
Yeah.
But if you're available, it gives people a kind of confidence somehow.
Yeah.
If not today, then tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And be available.
Yeah.
As a person listening or with your
yes.
practical help.
Mm-hmm. You don't have anything about, I mean, we talked about challenging our learning, so being open to and struggling with learning more about
yeah.
God or our relationship to the world because of God.
To be open to change.
And talking about being present, also being able to see God's will in the situations that we are in. Or
I think along with that being available, too, is also some things come to mind, is having the freedom not to be available as well, when necessary. When I don't know how to say
that. That has something to do with values or priorities, to make ourselves available for
right.
what we think is good.
Sometimes when I'm open or vulnerable, I feel like I have to oblige someone. And I don't have to
mm-hmm.
if I don't see what is God's will in it, you know, that said
yeah.
very loosely. But mm-hmm. to what sometimes when people ask me things, I'm wondering why. Why should I answer this? What good is it going to come from doing
mm-hmm.
this if I have to interrupt and be vulnerable and risk taking
yeah.
for no apparent reason?
Also, you have to be available to yourself.
Right.
And be very careful about that.
Yeah.
Being so available.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get at. I do that. And bothers me after I've done it. I said, why?
Yeah.
Why did I have to do that? Yeah. Why did I feel like I had to do that?
Yeah, we also have to minister to ourselves in order that we have something that we can draw from. I hear you say something like that we must be careful not to buy into expectations, that we must be careful not to accommodate to what people expect or what is normally done or what is culturally acceptable.
Yeah.
Be strong enough to cut through and say, I think this is what is important or what I should do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you want to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is an assumption that we're speaking here, Christian discipleship, right?
Yeah.
And to me, one of the characteristics of discipleship then is what we've spoken of earlier, living life as a prayer.
Yeah.
Or in sort of the constant relationship to God. I don't know how to express that.
Living life
as prayer is what I said.
But living life in communion with God. Or
to seek for it. Like all these things, it's only an aim of seeking to know the constant openness, presence, relationship.
And and that ties in with something I've been thinking about, living a centered life or a simplistic life or a single-minded life.
single-minded life, what do you mean by that?
That you have your attention directed towards one thing or towards God, and that is what informs your way of living. It doesn't mean that you don't involve in other things. It just means that you are centered on God, and that's where you draw your. What is better, centered?
God-centered.
Okay.
Single-minded to me is just a very narrow life, not an open life.
I think the simple-minded is spoken favorably of in the Bible to like become like children. And to me, it's also. Discipleship is also a building community. It is not our personal discipleship separately, but it is discipleship in community. And Corinthians 12 talk about that kind of corporate discipleship and the interrelatedness and the fact that no part of that community is superfluous, is that the word? Okay. Mm-hmm. And finally, I would say that discipleship is transformation, or should be transformation. Anything else that comes to mind?
I like the word, I don't know if I see it up there, willing. It's a big one for me. And I guess that applies a lot of vulnerability, but just being willing to see things, do things differently than before.
Kind of open.
Yeah, open. But I guess, right, it goes along with that willingness is the key to opening doors for me. Without that willingness, can't do anything, you see. That's just didn't see it for what we're talking about. It goes along with it.
I think of the word thankfulness, but I don't know how to say what that encompasses for me under the subject of discipleship. But living life not as a should necessarily, but as a if I use joy,
rejoicing,
that doesn't express either, because I don't mean to do away with that. Being willing to suffer this kind of thing, but that one accepts life and one's discipleship with thanksgiving.
Would you want to put rejoicing or? Or joy, or or perhaps you mentioned prayer too, that you could think of discipleship as a doxology.
What does that mean?
That means a rejoicing prayer or thankfulness.
Kind of thankful prayer. Warmth in discipleship, which I think maybe you can have in rejoicing, which you can do all that. And this is a kind of warmth, kind of embracing, a kind of all creation.
Yeah.
Really. Somehow it doesn't get across. But the warm personality, over and over and over again, people just bask in that. Just look them in the eye. And there's so much you can do, I've always thought, with them. Not words at all, this whole spectrum of non-verbal language and spirit, when you're transforms your non-verbal language.
And the embracing makes me think of that discipleship should be seeking wholeness for ourselves and for us with others. And with God. I'd asked if you would be willing to think about a few things that for you would especially make sense as your personal way of going about discipleship. Have you thought about any specific things?
I've got a question for you.
Yeah?
Real quick. When you say wholeness, does that have stronger connotations than the word balances to you? Like I'm trying to achieve a balance in this area of my life, in that area, you know, or wholeness, is that?
It definitely has a lot to do with each other, because balancing for me means something like integrating two things with each other. But I think that I see wholeness as something even more encompassing. Yeah.
Like,
well, I could perhaps just mention four things that I remember was mentioned about discipleship, that we are storytellers. Which basically means that we tell the story of the gospel and integrate that as our personal story, so that it informs our identity, and that it is a background and basis for what we do, and that it also becomes what our vision is based in, so that as disciples we are placed in a relation that is given by the gospel, and which gives a sense of belonging, and also that we are value bearers. That we have a, that by the gospel we are given certain values, and that these values contradict values or things that people often strive for, like greed and so on, and that we apply these values to all areas of life. And that we are people of the Spirit. Which again brings the aspect of the community into it. And that we are people of shalom, this wholeness again of peace, where peace is one aspect and justice is another aspect, and finally that we are sojourners or pilgrims, that we are on a spiritual journey, and that is a process that we're always moving. Would anybody be willing to first please ask questions, or contribute with what comes to your mind? Would anybody be willing to share what you've been thinking about as regards discipleship for you, what that could mean for you?
A couple things I think have to do with my work situation and my spirit. And one is that I'm thinking here of being a storyteller. In my workplace, in the shelter, which was started by Capuchin friars and then by nuns from the Order of St. Francis, in my orientation to the work, Sister Anne said, "We are not overtly evangelical. We don't talk openly. Not that you couldn't, but we aren't preaching to our clients. But rather it was through the service that we were telling the gospel."
Yeah.
And just to clarify, that certainly didn't mean we couldn't have rap sessions where the women were coming from faith-wise and bounce things off each other and talk about that. But that was one example. And another was, and I see this in the value bearers. And we had young black women asking me why, they'd ask questions about where I'm from and what I've been doing. And so why, if I'm coming from a rather secure background and have a BA degree and could be doing any other number of things, why I chose to do that. And I think that said something about my values. I wasn't out for the bucks, I was out for the experience. And in as much as and choosing the pay, making the commitment for the pay that I did, it didn't strike me as any big sacrifice. I was coming off a few years of quite comparable pay anyway, but but I felt well off, pooled with four others in my community. And so even there, I could struggle with, you know, values and the challenge for simplified living lifestyle, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, the place provided, house furnished with donations, and so it was not being so up on materialistic things, indeed. Yet we were very comfortable. It was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a far cry from where most of the people I worked with were coming at all.
Yeah.
And so I think that said something about my values or my willingness to be open to much less than they might suppose I would want or
yeah.
think I'd need
mm-hmm.
or expect to have.
Yeah.
So those are just a few thoughts. I don't even mm-hmm. in any self-righteous sort of way.
Oh, no.
That's just what I was coming to.
Mm-hmm. That ties in with one thing that I thought about. Which would also be being a storyteller and a value bearer, which I would like to be able to be more with my family and with my friends, that I could be more, that I could be a more of a witness bearer in what I say and what I do, and that there would be a congruity between what I say and what I do, how I live. And I think that I have mentioned how my situation perhaps is somewhat different from yours, that in Denmark our society seems so much more secular that it can be very difficult to communicate to others your Christian conviction and why it is important to you. And I've often felt that as a frustration which didn't enable me to really communicate it, and I'd like to be able to do that more and be able more to rest in my sense of God and thus rest in myself and not be hung up about what, you know, people think or what their reactions might be, and be restricted by knowing their resentment perhaps. Or
is it easier in America, do you sense?
I think so. Now I've been in communities where you could speak openly about God and about your faith, but also generally speaking, among young people, for example, I think you can discuss, you know, religious matters much more openly, whereas some people in Denmark will just get so embarrassed and block, you know, you can hardly mention God before they put you in a certain category and prejudice to what you what you say. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I was called religious.
I see. Yeah.
All my family called me religious.
Yeah.
My sisters.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with them.
How odd to a society where religion is such a foreign thing, where spirituality is so foreign. That seems so strange to me.
Uh-huh.
This is so with older people too. I think you're surprised at this. I have a lot of agnostic friends, but you'll find that in a lot of sophisticated university community, more and more actually than when where I am was very strictly Lutheran back in the 40s or 50s, I suppose. But when I come back from church on Sundays, I will often call in on some of my friends, and I want to share with them the things that had been happening,
mm-hmm.
what the sermon was about, and
mm-hmm.
what we sang. And they will say, oh, Kate, you're so churchy. Change the subject.
Uh-huh.
And we do. Churchy. I hate that word. And yet I feel sometimes I just have to sort of continue my Sunday morning path.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I talk about these things. Now, these are older people, many of whom were brought up in things like ethical culture, agnostics. They're not atheists, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really dwell upon these matters experientially, which is the only way I know to deal with any of this,
mm-hmm.
is through your experience. And more and more in our day and age, Christian people are becoming storytellers. And they're on the journey. And these are things, this is part of the language these days.
Mm-hmm.
That you're a storyteller, and you're a pilgrim, and you're on a journey, and you're
mm-hmm.
sharing your journey with other people. But many, many people, particularly in the Northwest, which is supposed to be the most unchurched part of the United States, where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they get their figures, but many people have told me that the Northwest is very, well, they're not interested in anything to do with an institution. They don't mind doing things in a secular community, and do. Maybe the most powerful of the religious communities is the Roman Catholic Church, like St. Leo's, where you had the people come up to Holy. Mm-hmm. I go there Saturdays, and I see a great openness to discussing religion in small groups, but that is a religious group.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Highly specialized, you see.
Yeah.
It's,
that was another thought I had as far as the open sharing, and that was a comfort for me. I mean, it was comfortable for me in that work situation to not be expected to bring things up, so to speak, and talk over. It was rather through the service.
Yeah.
And something I've recognized in recent years is how different my sister is from her mom. She's much more comfortable in prayer, talking about prayer, and she,
uh-huh.
And in talking with friends and doing peer helping and youth community work and all that jazz, which I admire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's more the same story.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A word that makes a lot of sense to me is risk taking, just being willing to try to make a difference and not always go for the more neutral and indifferent, because you don't want to put yourself at stake. And I find it personally difficult to take the authority to, you know, speak up about what I think is important and take the authority of the gospel and express what I think is the meaning of what the gospel is about. Other people want to share?
Would anybody here mind being called religious? I mean, just throwing that out. I know I...
Yeah, you depend what people mean when they...
Well, we don't know what they mean, it's, you know, but whatever they mean, doing some work, fellowship work,
mm-hmm.
I was with two people who I guess are religious, okay? Very much so. Some are even very
mm-hmm.
one was even fundamental and evangelical. But yet, when this topic came up to some degree, but when he was asked whether he was religious or not by a young lady, he said, no, that's not what I'm coming at. And it just struck me, what does that mean? I mean,
mm-hmm. I think...
Know, had negative connotations to
mm-hmm.
be called religious. Yet,
I think
I would not want to say I'm not religious.
I think I've come to a place now where I would be willing to say, yes, I'm religious, and also say it for the challenge of it.
Whatever
the
means.
Challenge it would be to other people.
Right, you know, exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Rather than try to explain away, well,
right.
You know, in one way, but in the other way, and don't take it to mean, and
right.
So on.
Right.
I want to feel comfortable.
Right.
Because I've been, like in school, for example, I was the only Christian in my class, and I was the religious one.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Before you get out of the religious one. And they put me in a different category.
Right.
And I wanted them to be different
words. Or kind of a negative stigma about technically being a PK.
Yeah.
It must be so religious.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That I felt some of it.
Yeah.
But they won't. It's ostracizing. It is. Not being included in everything. When you're categorized as religious, the rest of your friends won't include you in other activities because they know you're religious. I think that this means that
they would include me, but they knew what I thought about things.
Maybe that, well,
they,
what,
they
right. It's ostracizing for me when I get that. And, but then again, you know, like you say, well, better take a challenge on than not to.
It's a condescending, patronizing label, I think, but it's too bad that we're so wrapped up in that. I like what Ina said, not trying to justify it, because that's almost like the pride of saying, I'm really concerned about how you perceive me more than how you perceive God. And it's too bad it matters so much to us how we're perceived, you know. Well, heaven forbid that somebody think we're religious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are we?
Spiritual. I'd like to put it more personally. Yeah, there's a relationship with God that's sounded very cheap over the airwaves and over the pulpit waves sometimes, but it's very real, and I wish it could be made more real instead of talked around.
One of the things,
labels like that.
One of the things I heard people saying when they categorize as religious, one, this is just one, is that since I've accepted Christ, my life is going to be all glory and success come my way, sure enough. And when I say no, I'll probably, you know, I don't think that's true. I mean, we quote Bonhoeffer that Christ calls him, and he calls him to his death. But, you know, that sort of turns that stigma around a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't, you know, I heard myself saying, no, I don't want to be religious. But then what am I? You know?
Mm-hmm. By being labeled religious, we act differently?
Or
expectations have a lot of influence on how we feel and also how we act, I think.
And also how we use our time. Many people, I'm not talking about pious people, sometimes we confuse being pious and being religious, but I think lots of people, if they're interested in communication with God in a community, use Saturday night differently. Very difficult to stay up till 2 o'clock on Saturday night and still be with the community on Sunday morning. In other words, being religious can really be a barrier to other forms of communication.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen parties quite different because some of the people started leaving all things around 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of them say, where are you going? We're just beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, I have to get ready for Sunday morning.
What does
can really create some difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're breaking one community relationship to go to another community. I see that quite a bit, actually, where I am, the use of Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at home, then you just do it like the Catholics do on Saturday night, go to church, then go party and do whatever else, and you don't have to worry.
Yeah. I've done it when I first came to the States. I was in Columbus, Ohio, and we would party till 5 o'clock. And then go to the 5:30 a.m. Mass. So you get the Mass obligation out of the way. Well, that's more like I'm sure you
might have been religious in doing that.
Well, you see, this was there is to some degree a Mass obligation. And that was just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
It dawned upon us that we were no more ready to participate in the sacramental life than thrive.
Mm.
And we were just being legal on this matter.
Right.
Many times I've gone to Mass when I first came to this country at 5 a.m.
But then again, going to the service should only be a small part of what it is to be religious or what it is to be a disciple.
That's what I was thinking. Many times we're uncomfortable, I think, because we know that the person who says it has a negative feeling about it, and so that makes us feel uncomfortable. Because the very same term can be used completely differently. Some people might call me religious, and it will make me feel uncomfortable because I know what they're thinking when they say it. Some very fundamental group might say, I'm not religious, and that might make me feel bad too, because they think I'm not what they think religious has to be.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you can feel uncomfortable both being called religious or not religious.
Yeah, Greg.
What we think people are thinking or assuming by that term.
I was stepped out from that, but I was wondering, what was the definition of religious?
We don't know.
It's so loosely.
Well, they're just
bad. John had asked the question if it made other people feel uncomfortable if someone referred to them as being religious when someone is saying that to you.
Ron?
Just on the basis of that, religious is used so simply and loosely as pertaining to Christianity or your faith. I had a problem with being religious, and if I heard some commercial, I use band deodorant religiously, and boy, whoa, blast me, you know, I'm going to be in it. And I read what religious was. It's just something that you do all the time, but we just assume, and just, it's assumptive that religious, that has to do with Christianity. And so it's just a kind of a general term. You speak, well, am I religious? Religious what? You know? It's kind of an open statement or opinion or whatever.
Okay, except you're the Christian.
Yeah, anything, you eat breakfast religiously every day, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to the movies religiously.
And that's about making it a lifestyle and not only something you do at certain times. Yeah.
Yeah, what religious is actually, it's just what you do, and it's not a faith, it's not anything, actually, it's just something you do.
So the question could be, are you uncomfortable, if you pursue that question, being called a Christian? Or referring to yourself as a Christian?
You mean, like, that's a churchy...
Churchy.
Or pious.
Yeah, I'm religious, nobody thinks I'm religious. Yeah. And they know I circle around the church all the time.
Because when I came up, before I came up to Holden, I just said, yeah, we're going to learn some philosophy and theology. They're going to go, oh my gosh, you're going to turn into one of those now.
Right.
Bible thumping.
Don't get too much.
Slamming, yelling, everything. Yeah, don't get too involved.
A few people at home are confused. And thought at first I thought you got the Bible on
Facebook. Yeah.
My grandma said to me, you're already too religious.
Well, grandma.
Too religious. What's your problem? Delivery your husband because you're too religious.
that blocks for certain other things. Eh? Being religious blocks for certain other
That's
things.
Right.
Yeah, according to grandma. Uh-huh. I mean, she had lots of reasons why I was too religious.
Yeah.
I never tried
to be a college
freshman.
Yeah, something
I want one, yeah.
That's why
she's Well, thinking about discipleship, I tried to be very concrete and not be too ambitious. So what came to my mind is something I would like to try to engage more in was the close things or people just around me and try to be more present in those situations and reach out to people and problems that are just around me and try to be a healing force in that, as we talked about last session. It is so easy to rant and rave about all the problem, global issues, etc. And you might even be aware of that your neighbor next door could need some help. And and just making yourself present and listen and make yourself available, but also help practically, and see God in these people and bring out their gifts and let them know that they are loved. And a third thing that I've been thinking about was to actually make the step and not just talk about it, but actually enter something like a peace group and do a social, make a social political commitment. And make that, in that way, make that connection between a personal spirituality and a social engagement. Also because I think that one grows from the other, and you can't really say, well, I have to achieve a certain
a certain degree of spirituality before I can enter into a commitment, and the other way around. I mean that they are really tied in, that Christianity should be lived, Christianity or a lifestyle.
That's where some of the struggle comes too, because we talked about, you put the word community building, and yet sometimes it then becomes an individual discipleship, in that there are Christian disciples, there are Christians, in other words, followers of Christ, disciples of Christ, who feel exactly the opposite from what I do in regards to, say, joining a peace group. They might feel they are carrying out the discipleship, but be very much against that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes,
yeah. It
becomes one's own discipleship then.
Yeah.
Even though it's also important to think about the community building aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Because not all disciples
feel
the same call to the same thing, mm-hmm. or feel that they even are part of the call to discipleship.
But then hopefully you could be disciples in a community, though you don't agree.
Yes.
But mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. praxis, it's often different. And when I thought about these things, I realized that that in engaging in these things, I wouldn't only, hopefully, mean healing for other people, but that would probably also mean healing for me to make that commitment and to try to take on discipleship and grow in it, that there's a mutuality also in that sense, that when we think that we minister to somebody, we actually also minister to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that made me think of, I've heard a sermon on the parable of the Good Samaritan, where the preachers didn't, he took a different aspect and said, well, don't think of your, first you think of Jesus as a Good Samaritan, of course, and then you think, aha, I have to follow Jesus' example, so I have to be the Good Samaritan. But he said, think of once, for once, of yourself as the one who is allowing somebody else to help you. Think of yourself as the one who is wounded or vulnerable, and be willing to let somebody else minister to you and heal you. And I thought that was a very interesting perspective. I've got quite a lot here, just generally, and please feel free to, when you find that there's something that rings a bell or is of interest, just interrupt.
I'm just curious if what comes to mind for everybody when discipleship is thrown out as a word is something person happening there, or if it's something person God happening that way, or one more than the other, or what people think it's about.
God, person.
That's what I think of.
I thought of person through God.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about those two aspects when I talked about the aspects of grace and commitment being tied together, because mm-hmm. the grace is that vertical dimension, that by grace you are empowered to make the commitment, which is the horizontal reaching out to your neighbor. So I don't think they can be separated, and perhaps you can't even discuss which comes first, that it's a process in which they are tied in so much. I think perhaps I believe that your sense of God would definitely be enriched by your actual reaching out. I think that by your reaching out and making a commitment, your sense of God would be enriched and become much stronger.
But I can also reach out without that relationship with God? Or is that, would that still be a discipleship if I don't have that relationship with God?
I would probably say that we do it on the basis of grace, of the sense of being empowered and being loved first. But I'm just nervous about our, you know, being too slow and never getting round to make the commitment that should grow out of there. That we just feel so comfortable in the knowing that we are accepted and have God's grace, and that things are fine with that.
Anna asked, could you do that without having this relationship with God? Well, if you look at what discipleship means there, yet, if that's how we've described discipleship, except maybe prayer for living. But also to think about what Kevin said, all of those things most of those things seem to be person action, person to person kind of things.
Uh-huh.
Most of those things. So if you're looking at with discipleship, to me, just looking at that, it seems like we've described it as more person to person.
Well, what about trust? Love. Love could be both aspects. Faithfulness.
Or God centered.
To yeah. God.
Yeah, I was just looking at, I mean, I'm not saying that it's all one way, but mm-hmm. it looks like it's more.
And also, it's when you've done the deed, this is the strange thing, and you begin to reflect on what happens. Often the God empowering seems to come to me, anyway, in reflection.
Mm-hmm.
I love your idea. I think we have to be very concrete in this whole thing. I do a Bible class on Saturday in a retirement home. One lady is totally blind, another one almost totally deaf. And there's a great variety of people there. And I just go, and I don't always want to do it all year long. And at the time, sometimes, it's so difficult. I don't feel the presence of God. But as I come away from those people, often I will be sort of filled with joy. I have a different feeling than when I went in the building, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the reflection about God coming after the deed. It's very strange what reflection does to you as you carry out this. That's why I think we need lots of time for reflection, not to go on to the next thing, which is what anybody who's kind of busy is inclined to do. So I always leave them a little early, telling them, lying to them, I'm going to do the grocery shopping, which I'm not. I'm going to walk in the park. But they might not all understand that. They want me to stay with them. And my neighbor always wants to touch me.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting, touch my hair, be sure I'm there. They don't want me to go. I'm just a once a week occurrence in their lives, you see. Then I just walk across the park. And I feel differently. I think one can trust one's feeling than when I went in. And I think that's what I call God's grace. It
mm-hmm.
has allowed me to do what is somewhat difficult, I might say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always reflect. I really feel for all of us, we need to reflect, as Carolyn said, with immense gratitude on what has just happened.
Mm-hmm.
All day long, this, you know, the psalms of gratitude just flowing through you. And
mm-hmm.
often after a rather sticky situation where you have people really coming to the end of their lives, and this could be a little bit physical problem there. Plus one dear lady who really sort of interrupts everybody. And it's tricky. It really is. But I always feel wonderful as I walk across the path afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure. And I don't feel tired. Now normally one would feel tired after an hour like that. You don't. You're just filled with the joy.
That something is
the
taking
spirit,
place.
The Holy Spirit
seems
to just fill you with joy.
Mm-hmm.
I usually mention this to people, although people do say, well, why don't you go shopping on Saturday mornings? You know, that's the one time we do have to go to malls and so on, it's Saturday mornings. No, why should I? It doesn't interest me.
Mm-hmm.
But these people interest me enormously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an example of the need for reflection that turns all that from being a secular thing, I think, into a religious thing, as you
mm-hmm.
dwell upon it.
I think here in that example illustrates how I think of in the ways person to person, but through God, I guess that's with the presence, with the spirit, which I think any of those can be.
Mm-hmm. In response to Anna's question, if it isn't from God first, I guess to me, the only reason this becomes discipleship is, or the only reason I feel committed to any of this, is because of my discipleship to Christ, first of all. Mm-hmm. Not that all of this isn't part of it, it doesn't make it grow, and that it can't add to it. But there's no reason for myself to be committed to all of these things except as I'm committed to Christ, because Christ is the law, and I don't have that unless it's my commitment to Christ first. So while it's all together,
on the other hand,
Christ has to come first, or it isn't even a
on the other hand, I've seen people engage in commitments without making a conscious without making a conscious confession that they do it as Christians, and I see it as a very God pleasing, that they engage in very God pleasing actions.
So do I, very much so. But all I'm saying is, for me, my commitment is to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
First, I mean, that's my whole reason. I don't even know love except that I know love from Christ. And to enable to act out faithfulness or suffering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for me as a Christian, I'm talking about Christian discipleship, so mm-hmm. therefore that has to start with Christ. I agree, I think too, that someone who does not profess it as being a Christian, it still certainly is God pleasing. But you just, Kevin started out by asking as, and I had said earlier, are we talking about Christian discipleship? And if we are, then to me that has to start with mm-hmm. Christ. That's who I'm committing myself mm-hmm. to.
Yeah, and
that's how you know God. Mm-hmm. Right?
What do you say, Carolyn? That's how, one of the ways he's revealed.
Mm-hmm. And it might come to be revealed through those commitments.
Uh-huh.
It might evolve for them. They might not get out that way. They might evolve.
Right. Thinking about discipleship, there were some consideration or clusters of concerns that came up for me, and the first of them was that weighing or balancing a personal spirituality with a commitment, or weighing grace with action, or the vertical dimension with the horizontal. And I mean, to me it is obvious that the two are tied so much together that we can't and we shouldn't separate them.